You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 114 of the Talking Chop Podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland, coming to you live on the Sunday evening of Memorial Day weekend. And join me for the first time in far too long, frankly, it's the great Eric Cole. What's up, man?
Hey, man. Sorry I couldn't come. I couldn't be on the show. What was it, a week or two ago you asked me? I couldn't make it. I was kind of covered up, so I'm glad to be back.
Listen, I can't expect you to come on every single time I ask you. People have lives, including you, and you have a new venture even, which I'll let you talk about if you want to. But it's been busy for everyone, and I'm glad that the Braves won on Sunday, but it would have been a lot different podcast had they lost Sunday and come into this podcast losing 5 out of 6 games. You know, winning is nice, although there is obviously a looming story as we record this. Just for clarity's sake, it's about 7:30 on Sunday, so we do not know anything right now about Ronald Acuna. We'll get to that in a moment. Aside from Acuna, what were your takeaways from the last couple of series? Because, you know, obviously Philly was pretty frustrated. They didn't really score any runs against the Phillies. Managed to get a win in there somewhere, but, you know, losing 2 series in a row here, not exactly ideal, I guess.
No, it's not ideal, but I honestly didn't have, like, super high expectations from this road trip. Playing the Phillies, who are probably one of the better teams in the National League right now, at their house where they are like 19-9 this year, and then going to Fenway to go against the Red Sox, who probably are the best team in baseball right now. I mean, the Yankees are making a pretty good run along with a couple other teams, you know, the Astros and a couple others, but I mean, they're in that conversation. And I was just like, I was just kind of crossing my fingers and hoping for a split. I mean, with those two teams, a 2-4 road trip really isn't that crazy to me. You know, the Phillies pitched really, really well. They have some young starters that pitched really well, and you know, the Braves weren't like completely out of those games. They just, you know, the bats went cold for a little while, and that's going to happen sometimes. I didn't really draw too much from it. Obviously, I wish the road trip had gone better, but honestly, you know, you put up a bunch of runs on Chris Sale, and you know, there's at least one of those Red Sox games they could have very easily won. If they had just, you know, a couple things had gone differently, you know, it's, I didn't really draw too many conclusions about it. I still think the Braves are a pretty good baseball team. And, you know, it's nice that, you know, it's nice that they're competing against the best. And I'm kind of looking forward to going against some teams that aren't quite as loaded as those two teams are.
Yeah, I mean, last week on the podcast, we talked about sort of previewing, Scott and I talked about this week that we just actually got through. And I think I might have even said 2-4 is an okay result, and that's what they ended up. So, you know, it's not like it's some sort of disaster when you go 2-4 against the Marlins and the whoever, name your other bad team here. You're playing against 2 good teams on the road. You didn't get killed. And, you know, they led both games in Boston, yep, that they lost. So it's not like they were, you know, they got blown out. Obviously, there was some less than ideal innings there in the latter sort of the stretch runs of those two games. But still, 2-4 is not the worst thing in the world. Looking quickly ahead to Monday and beyond, doubleheader on Monday at home on Memorial Day, which will be very interesting, obviously. And Max Fried coming back up to make the start in the early game, followed by Brandon McCarthy, and then apparently Anibal Sanchez is the likely starter on Tuesday. So a quick 4-gamer over 3 days with the Mets, and then Washington for 4 games. So 8-game week, all against the Mets and the Nationals. So if Braves fans hate the Mets and the Nationals, which is most of you, a lot on the line this week, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's somewhat fortunate that the Mets seem to be, I don't want to say they're not good, but they're certainly. Kind of a middling sort of team, and they seem to have been really struggling against the Braves. So that could be a good series for the Braves. The Nationals, I mean, it depends on which Nationals team shows up. Sometimes they don't look like they could be beaten by anybody, and then sometimes it looks like, you know, the Marlins or the Reds could sweep them. It just kind of depends on, you know, if Bryce Harper is hitting and, you know, kind of how the rotation lines up for them. So it could go a lot of different ways. It's going to be a big week for the Braves because they kind of want to make up some of the ground that they lost on the road trip. They want to have, but beyond that, we'll see what happens, I guess. But ultimately, I think it'll be a good week. I expect maybe 4-3 or 5-2 week. I hope with maybe, like a split in Washington or something like that. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you have 8 games against, if not the 2 biggest rivals, 2 of the 3 or 4 biggest rivals, that's a lot to take in. And frankly, the pitching matchup in the early game on Monday is not favorable with Max Fried going against Jacob DeGrom, even at SunTrust. Quick turnaround as well with the 1-10 start on Monday. That's not a game that you're supposed to win necessarily. And then, of course, Washington. It looks like as of now, though, the Nationals will not be pitching Max Scherzer in that series, which is a win. I mean, obviously.
He is a very good baseball pitcher.
I mean, if you tell me that you're gonna face the Nationals 4 times and you somehow miss Scherzer, that's very, very fortunate. So hopefully that holds as well if you're a Braves fan looking for wins. Okay, let's move on to the troublesome, terrifying, miserable story of the day, and that is Ronald Acuña, who I'm sure everybody's seen this by now, but suffered what looks to be a knee injury. I guess the Braves have described it as a knee and back pain, which is a very interesting release that they sent out on Sunday afternoon, sort of when he was running through first base. No official update. Again, as of now, it's 7:30 on Sunday night. So if you're listening to this later and there's an update, I apologize, and we will do what we can to update on the site. So, if the news is better, check out talkingchop.com. But what we know right now is not much. TBD on the timeline, and frankly, it was just more scary than anything. The options as to how bad this could be range very, very wildly. If there's structural damage, you're talking about a very long-term injury, and if there's not, maybe he misses. I can't imagine he's playing tomorrow, frankly, after the way that looked. And he was able to get off the field under his own power, which is very nice to see. At the same time, it took a long time, and they even brought out, a wheelchair, which is a choice that Boston made for some reason. So where are you at with this thing? Obviously, aside from just the existential dread of seeing Ronald Acuña writhing in pain, are you terrified? Where are you at with this thing right now?
It looked really bad. It wasn't a particularly good look, because part of the reason he hurt himself is because he was trying to gesture to the umpire that he was safe. And then he was turned sideways and his leg bent in a way that a leg shouldn't bend. He looked very painful, but he did walk off the field, but there's no shortage of people with, some semblance of medical knowledge that have told you that doesn't necessarily mean that there isn't structural damage and it's not a serious injury either. I have a tough time imagining that there won't be a disabled list stint for Acuña. Now, the length of that is what could vary widely. He could just be put on the 10-day DL if it's just kind of a strain. He dodged a bullet. He misses some time. But then there's also the chance that he might knees are tough. If there's a lot of things that can go wrong. So it's kind of hard to speculate too much. Other than it didn't look good. I was happy that he was able to walk off the field, but at the same time, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, and I'm hopeful that it won't be a super prolonged or even a season ending thing. The Braves are pretty fortunate though, because while Preston Tucker isn't an ideal option to have in left field, I don't mind if he has to play if plays the position given the situation. There's an outside chance that if Tucker doesn't really work out, that Dustin Peterson's down there in Gwinnett, who had a pretty good spring. He missed some time this year too with a recurring thing with his hand and wrist, the same one that missed a bunch of time with last year. But he hit a home run and just a little while ago, and he looks like he could be a guy that could see some time if need be. But obviously it's not anywhere close to the talent level of Ronald Acuña, but at the same time, it's not like you're running the worst of the worst out there if he has to miss some prolonged period of time.
Yeah, I mean, Preston Tucker predictably cooled off after his outrageous start to the season. That was always going to happen. Not quite as badly as Ryan Flaherty has cooled off, and that was, by the way, Preston Tucker's just a better hitter than Ryan Flaherty. But yes. Tucker, as you mentioned, is not an ideal long-term corner outfield option. There are worse options, though, and I think Peterson might get a look, especially if Tucker were to struggle a little bit. And, if Acuña was out for a long time, they have to make a roster move of some sort, and you're going to have to bring an outfielder up of some sort. So it might be Peterson. You never know what they're going to do there. I'm kind of with you.
Could also be Danny Santana.
It certainly could be. And in fact, if I was making a bet, I would probably bet that, frankly. I think I would be a little bit surprised if they went to Peterson, only because if you go to Peterson, you have to – for me, you got to play him. If you're planning on starting Preston Tucker every day or mostly every day during an Acuña absence, just go to San. I mean, not that I'm recommending it, but I think that I'd be pretty surprised if they did, if they didn't go to, just go to Santana or, you know, whatever, sign somebody off the scrap heap. I can't imagine they're going to want to go to Peterson if he's not going to play. But you know, who knows at this point in time. And frankly, as you mentioned, I think I'd be a little bit surprised if it wasn't a DL stint, but it's not crazy that it could, he could avoid a DL. It's at least conceivable. And we're going to sound silly regardless of what happens here, because we're trying to toe the line as much as we possibly can without information. And we record the podcast on Sunday night, so I want to get the podcast out. I mean, ideally, I wanted to wait probably until tomorrow to record, just because it's a big deal. But at the same time, you kind of got to have to talk about it in the time frame that we're talking about it. So if he missed the rest of the season, I wouldn't be blown away. And in terms of a shocking perspective, if he missed, you know, I think it was it DOB? Somebody was talking about Bryce Harper's injury looking similar, you know, semi-recently. I think he missed 40 games or so. You know, I we're all guessing at this point in time. You know,
yeah, it's all speculation, and it's almost needless because you know, we don't even have a vague idea.
Oh no, there's, I mean, their release literally of neck of knee and back pain is absolutely nothing. That tells you nothing. So there's no, like, we're testing for a sprain. I mean, I'm sure he's having an MRI. We're probably going to find out Monday now, I'd imagine, based on the delay. Like, you normally would find out in the first couple of hours, and if not, you're probably waiting until the next day.
Yeah, I will say that the one thing that I have seen from a couple places is that he is traveling back with the team,
which is probably good, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly don't think that's bad news.
No, it's so, not. I mean, and again, like, if it was a pretty serious injury, I wouldn't be stunned. It looked terrible. His reaction looked terrible. Like, he looked like he had really suffered a major injury. And then he walks off, and I'm glad you mentioned it. Like, walking off doesn't mean that he doesn't have structural damage. People walk off all the time with injuries that don't look as bad, especially, you know, I cover the NBA. It happens more often there, with knee injuries happen more often in that particular sport, but it often happens where guys will know that they're hurt, but they can, but they're able to walk. It's not a situation where you're unable to function and move. So that doesn't really tell us much either. So, you know, fingers crossed, hold your breath, all that fun stuff. You know, obviously Acuña has been a lot of fun. You know, there's probably a segment of the fan base that says he's been disappointing so far, which is insane, because he's just been pretty good instead of outrageously good. But you know, as young as he is, as talented as he is, it's obviously awful news if he's able to miss any time. We'll have our fingers crossed again on that for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, we can move on from that. And again, if something hits during the podcast, I will be sure to let you guys know by the end of the show. I'm sure that, you know, it's one of those things.
Yeah, I'm refreshing Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter is live. TweetDeck is running for me as well. You know, on a more positive note, injury-wise, Mike Soroka is apparently throwing a bullpen either today or tomorrow, according to reports, and is expected to make a rehab start later on in this week. Aside from just the sheer brilliance of that for your guy, Daniel asked a question on Twitter, and he asked sort of the one that's, you know, pretty obvious, is that basically, how is the rotation going to work out with Soroka coming back and Gohara whenever he returns as well? Who's the odd man out? Because right now they have six starters plus Colby Howard looming in Gwinnett. So where are you feeling about Soroka? And then, of course, like, what the, I guess the bigger question of who's the five-man unit if you have to go with one?
Well, I mean, just Fulte, Newcomb, and Tehran are going to be there.
Absolutely. Like,
those three are going to be in the rotation. I think the Braves are not being disingenuous in saying that they view Gohara as a starter going forward. I just don't know if that necessarily means he's instantly going to be popped back into the rotation. I understand what the speculation is, but I still don't think that they're going to kind of continue to have him in the bullpen for a while until they kind of have to make a decision. McCarthy is kind of a weird case because he's been pitching pretty well, kind of, at times. And you kind of want to keep showcasing him because he's a guy that's on the last year of his deal. And we start talking about, you know, if you do want Gohara in the rotation, you know, one of the easiest ways to do that is to be like, trade a guy who's on an expiring deal to someone else and then put Gohara in, especially if you think he's an upgrade, because then another team that needs him and you get an asset back. I still think Soroka will be in the rotation. You know, it didn't seem like the shoulder injury was a super serious thing. It's just he was sore and he did the right thing. He's like, hey, I just don't feel right. And, you know, they just gave it some time to rest and get healthy. And that's what he should have done. I don't necessarily think Allard is anything particularly eminent. He's been pitching really, really well down in Gwinnett. But they just have so many options right now. It just feels like that they're not really going to be in a rush, especially for a guy like Colby, who they kind of want to see how he holds up, you know, in terms of his velocity and in terms of staying healthy and all that stuff, you know, how he holds up over the course of a season. It might be the second half before we would see him, especially since that while some of the numbers have been good, some of the peripherals have only been okay. So you kind of want to have him work on some things. He hasn't been, you know, completely dominating his starts. He's just, you know, has really good command and, you know, knows how to pitch his way out of trouble. And that's certainly an asset. But at the same time, it doesn't necessarily feel like he's pushing for a promotion right now, if that makes any sense.
It does. If people ask about Al all the time, that's probably the answer I'd give him as well. I think there's no reason to rush him along right now unless you have, you know, a trade or something very weird, because, you know, there's no reason to push that guy like that.
No one in the rotation is a walking dumpster fire. There's a lot of guys, like, you know, Gohara might be debatable as to whether or not Gohara deserves the shot in the rotation before Aller does.
I think he does. I mean, that's not a shot at Aller. It's like, we've already seen Gohara be pretty good in the rotation at the major league level. He's also older and as generally seen as more advanced. So it's not like, I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine they would go to Aller before Gohara at this point. That'd be pretty surprising.
So, I mean, those guys might very well get shots, and, you know, those things happen where they just need a spot start here and there or whatever. But overall, I'm not – what it is right now is probably what it's going to be for a little while. And then, you know, McCarthy being probably the biggest piece that will probably not be in the rotation by the end of the year. And then depending on which Julio chooses to show up on any given night, well, we can determine what's going to happen with him going forward too.
Yeah, I mean, from a peripheral perspective, Tehran's been the worst pitcher on the team this year, starting pitcher on the team, I should say. McCarthy, he had two really bad starts in a row, and aside from that, he's been really good the rest of the season. And I've long said that as long as McCarthy is healthy, there's no reason to think he won't be pretty good. He's been pretty good everywhere he's ever been, aside from when he's hurt. So, I mean, I guess you're sort of that ticking time bomb with McCarthy, because he just always seems to get hurt somewhere along the way. He has one season of more than 170 innings in his career, and he's been a full-time starter for a long time. So it's not like a situation where he's super safe, but when he's pitching, he's usually very good, and that's one of the things you have to try to maximize. At some point, you think they're going to probably trade him, but, you know, the longer the Braves hold out here, there's less urgency to do that, because right now, as a general rule, he's probably helping you, because McCarthy, again, aside from two starts, has been really good this season. So I don't know. I'm kind of with you. I think it's going to be the three guys we talked about plus McCarthy and Soroka when he's available, which is probably going to be, you know, next week, it looks like. But, you know, it's very fluid aside from that, because, listen, if Tehran has two or three more bad starts in a row, people are going to start screaming. They're already whispering, and I'm with you that he's in the rotation until he completely implodes. But if he actually does implode, it gets very interesting in a hurry.
Yes.
And there are some not encouraging signs there.
You're not wrong. You know, and he has had good, like, and that's the thing. It's because, like, he'll have one start where he looks really good, and the peripherals from that start will look really good. And then he'll have a start where he just, like, everything that is bad about Tehran is really bad. And that inconsistency is frustrating.
He just can't, like, right now he's walking more than four guys per nine innings. He just can't do that. He cannot live. His stuff is not, you know, Sean Newcomb can live with four strikeouts per nine. I mean, four walks per nine. Julio cannot.
Yeah, like, because you can't hit Newcomb is the problem. Like, correct. He'll give up two or three hits.
And, I mean, Julio's home run rate is probably a little bit inflated. His BABIP's actually very low. Like, he's been lucky to have a 4.2 ERA. You know, his FIP is almost 5.3 right now. I think, you know, he's not like he's terrible, but there are starts when it looks like he is done, and then the next start he'll look pretty good again, as you mentioned. So I'm not burying Julio Tehran, but if for some reason you stretch, you know, two or three bad starts in a row together, I think the Braves are going to have a very long hook on Tehran, because he's been a guy in the rotation for a long time. He's under contract, et cetera, et cetera. But Anthopoulos would think have less loyalty to Tehran than your normal GM. He just got here. I don't think there's much of a relationship there. I mean, maybe there is now that we just don't know about. But he's a first year GM with a guy who isn't performing all that well. And
it does depend a lot on how well the Braves are performing, because if they're like hanging around in this division race in July, and every fifth day Tehran is laying an egg, I don't know what your timeline is going to look like on Twitter, but I know what mine's going to look like, and it's going to be awful. I think they're going to be under a lot of pressure to make a change if he's struggling. Now, that's not to say he will, because
he might not.
That's what's weird about him is, like, he'll have, you know, these like 6-inning stints where he'll like walk one guy and, you know, maybe give up one run, and then he'll have ones where he like doesn't escape the third inning, you know, and it's like, what do you do? It's hard to peg which one's going to show up on any given night. I'm just hopeful that the good one shows up more often than not right now.
Yeah, and to clarify a little bit, you know, his ERA right now, 4.2. If it's in that range, he's not going anywhere.
No.
It would take a pretty significant blow up for Tehran to lead the rotation, either injury or just performance-wise. But 4.0, I mean, I don't care what his FIP is. I mean, I do care what his FIP is, but if his ERA is 4.2, he's not going to be leaving the rotation. Let's just say that.
You're going to be looking for Bartolo Colon 2017 numbers to try to get him out of the rotation.
Yeah, it would have to be bad for a while, but there are some signs where it could be that bad. And because the Braves have other options, you also could see that phantom DL stint pretty quickly on a guy. I mean, there were already calls for that with McCarthy after he had those two bad starts in a row.
Strained success gland.
I think if McCarthy had a third bad start in a row, you might have seen it with him. But then he came back and he's now allowed one earned run in two straight starts. So that's now on the back burner. But Anthopoulos has been willing to exercise that in the past, we should say. So just something to keep an eye on. I'm with you. I think we are in agreement on who the five guys are when Soroka arrives. It just becomes interesting to see what happens moving forward, especially as long as the Braves are in the race. And right now, there's no indication as to the fact that they won't be in the race. Even if they cool off, they're going to be in the race for a long, long time here, unless it goes very, very south.
No, agreed.
Ooh, which is a weird sentence to say after.
Yep. Enjoy it, Brad. It's okay to be happy.
Listen, I've already written a very positive thing about the team and how we were all wrong, and that's been a lot of fun. And
I just assume that was the work of pod people.
Yeah, no, it was kind of. It's just one of those things where my personality won't allow me to just not think about how regression might be arriving. But at the same time, I'm trying really actively hard to be not the guy that I normally am. And they've been really good all season long, and they've been fun. And 2-4 this week isn't going to bring me down. If they had gone 0-6,
it would have been different, but
here you go.
And that's the thing, that they have been really fun to watch, and like
all year,
they've won a lot of different ways. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't feel like they've gotten lucky to win. The comeback against the Marlins, there's a little bit of luck involved.
Yeah, that was wild.
But at the same time, that was a lot of fun to watch and experience too. So it was nice to have that happen to someone else.
Yes. I mean, obviously shades of Brooks Conrad, and I'm not sure if you heard the podcast, but I recorded most of it, Indian style, on the floor of a closet in the dark because I had a fire alarm going off. So there's, that was a lot of fun. I'm sure everybody's laughing
awesome
now that they're listening. We had one window with Scott last week. If you guys missed the podcast, please go back and listen to it, because I would recommend it highly. But, Scott and I had about 1 hour total that we could work with, and, everything possible went wrong. It was still a good podcast, but the game was a lot longer than it was supposed to be, and then the comeback happened. I missed part of it because I was in the closet trying to keep the beeping noise to a minimum because my fire alarm went off for, and I'm not exaggerating, 5.5 hours on Sunday.
Wow.
Last week. But it was listenable for the most part, so I'm proud of the way that it came out. But it was kind of a comedy of errors, and of course the Braves were making that massive comeback while we were recording, so it was tremendous. I would recommend it to anybody that missed last week's podcast. Moving on real quick.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, there was a lot going on, I promise. This is not a super recent report. It actually came out Monday, but it was after we recorded last week. It came from Nick Cofaro of the Boston Globe, who actually talked about how there is a quote, growing feeling among talent evaluators that Mike Moustakas could become a Braves target, end quote. We talked about third base on every podcast for a while, and there's obviously reasons for that, considering, for instance, Sunday was a Charlie Culberson start at third base because Camargo had gone 0-12, and I guess that was the short hook that he got after playing every day, quote unquote. But Moustakas has been good this year, 121 WRC plus entering today, and he's on a one-year contract, has a mutual option. He was a guy the Braves were at least pseudo-linked to in the offseason. Obviously, it's just a pure rental bat. But if the Braves hang around, he might make some sense. What do you think about that report? And I guess third base in general, because you and I haven't talked about that in a while.
I don't hate the idea of going after Moustakas. Now, the question becomes, because the Royals have, like over this past week, the Royals have, talked about making their players available and that they've finally come around to the idea that, hey, maybe it's not going to be our year because, we keep signing the same 30-plus year old guys, and we're not very good.
And by the way, they are 18-35.
Right? Yeah, they're quite bad.
Yes.
And now they're starting to think, well, maybe we should try to start trading some people after they re-sign these guys. I'm gonna ignore the fact that I am exceedingly happy that Dayton Moore is not the general manager of the Braves, because the way in which he runs a team, I have a tough time understanding, but. I don't hate the idea of going after Moustakas. Now, the question becomes price and what the Royals think would be a fair price for a one-year rental like that. On, it's 1 year, $50 million deal. Is that what it is for this year?
No, this year is even less than that.
Next
year is $15 million as a mutual option. But this year, I think I'm looking up right now. I think it's like $8 million.
Yeah.
This year is $6.5 million.
That's the kind of money where they could probably finagle a better prospect out of the deal.
Agreed.
You know, because because Moustakas is having a really good year. I mean, 121 WRC plus is no joke. And, you know, he's been a above average to good player for a little while now. So it wouldn't feel like that would be necessarily a bad call. Like the couple things just comes down to what the Royals want back for a guy that would ultimately be a rental, because whether or not the Braves would re-sign him to a long-term deal is a kind of a different question altogether, but
probably not.
Yeah. Well,
you have to assume no on a rental. Like, it's always a possibility that you could sign a guy, but unless the guy signs an extension before he arrives, a la Dan Uggla, you have to assume it's a rental. You just do.
Yeah, yeah, and that he's going to go somewhere else. And so it just depends on the price for me. What I'm going to be watching for probably over the next month or so, because I don't think that deal gets done until like really close to the deadline, because the Royals are going to try to get the best offer humanly possible for Moustakas if they're actually going to trade him. I'm going to watch this to see how much the Braves are actually connected to him, because this was just kind of speculation that, you know, like it just kind of makes sense. It just kind of makes sense that, you know, Moustakas is a third baseman. The Braves need a third baseman, so therefore they will go after Moustakas. Not like the Braves are in active discussions or anything like that. I want to see some actual connections to the Royals and the Braves in terms of getting together on a deal, because if they don't, if they're not connected, I think it's very likely that means that Austin Riley's getting called up this summer. And in which case, if they're planning on calling up Riley, I don't know if they necessarily want to pay the price for Moustakas for a rental. And Riley's hitting really well right now. He had two more hits today, and you know the homers were kind of all condensed into one game, but everything else, I mean, the average has been there, and you know he's still striking out a decent bit, but that's just part of Austin's game, and he's walking and he's having good at bats down there. It's it's not crazy to assume that he might get called up this summer. Now, if Anthopoulos is wanting to pump the brakes on that, because, I mean, Austin did start the year at AA. He doesn't have a ton of AAA at-bats. So if they're wanting to say, hey, you know what, let's just give him the year at AAA, then a trade for Moustakas, assuming the price is right, makes a lot of sense. But if they're wanting to be aggressive with Riley and they really believe in him, you might not see the Braves connected to Moustakas really, as opposed to just kind of the speculation stuff that Cafardo and, John Heyman are doing, If it's not anything beyond that, then I think it's likely that we'll see Riley in Atlanta.
Yeah, I still think the most likely scenario is Riley, just because if he's good and it doesn't require a second team to sign off on a deal. Like, it's always easier to call up a prospect than it is to make a trade. That's kind of what it comes down to. Like, I think ideally, if I was the Braves, I'd be looking for someone like Moustakas on a rental, because even if you believe in Austin Riley, it's fairly unlikely that he'd be better than Mike Moustakas this season. And if you were trying to go for it, as the Braves might be trying to do, at least to some extent, if they're still
kind of wild.
Again, yeah, it's this whole prism is very strange, and I didn't expect to be here on Memorial Day weekend. But if the Braves are still hanging around the race, or leading the NL East and making a real run at things, I think it does make a lot of sense to go get a rental, especially at third base. That's the one spot on the diamond where you have a noticeable hole. Like, Ryan Flaherty is not very good. That's not a big surprise to anybody. Johan Camargo, I've never believed in to the point of other people. And even if you like Johan Camargo, I think you have to acknowledge that he's not this great third base option. Like, he's not. I don't think he's ever going to hit like a top tier third base.
I personally like Johan as like what we wanted Chase Peterson to be.
Yes, me
he's
too.
He's like a super utility thing. Can play him anywhere, and he won't be awful. You know what I mean?
And that's
he's the best guy you want.
That's a very useful player, and I think people think that I'm like crapping on Camargo, and that's really not the case. I just don't think he's a full time. If at third base, you really want a plus bat at third base, ideally, and he's not going to be that. I don't think he's going to be that. That's just me. I guess it's not impossible, but ideally, his bat is more of a middle infielder bat than it is a third base bat. In addition to everything else, so even if you really like Johan Camargo, I don't think he profiles as this perfect third base option, and I think the Braves probably agree. So,
yeah.
And by the way, he's the best option now. I would not say anything else. He's better than Ryan Flaherty. He's better than Charlie Culberson. He should play most days at third base right now. But it doesn't mean that you can't and shouldn't try to upgrade on him if you're trying to make a run this year, because that's the weakest spot on the diamond. There's no way around it. It's easily the worst spot. really on the roster right now, starting third baseman. I think that's probably the worst spot on the roster. Am I crazy?
I mean, there's a couple relievers that.
Oh, you know, sure, but I mean,
I think you're kind of in the right spot.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. And again, it's not a shot at anybody that's there now. I just think there's always, you know, even on the best teams in the league, unless you're the Houston Astros, who are just absurd from top to bottom. most French, even the best teams in the league, have spots where they want to upgrade, and that's third base is a spot for the Braves. So that's just something you have to loom out there. So if the Braves are 10 games over 500 in July, I think they're going to trade for somebody. I really do. But I just can't project that over the ease of Austin Riley, because if Austin Riley was still hitting, he's coming up in September if he's hitting. I'd be stunned if he wasn't. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree.
When the roster expands, like, they're at least going to give him a
shot.
Here's
my question about the Moustakas thing, right? Let's assume that it's still a hole and the Braves just, for whatever reason, are not calling up Austin Riley. It's not happening. For whatever reason. What is a reasonable price for Moustakas for you? Like, where's the line where you're like, this is about the best I'm willing to go for that?
I mean, on a one-year rental for a non-star, because he's not a star. He's a
good player.
He's a good player. He's like a 3-1 player, probably, on average. I'm just thinking, like, I mean, he's not this great defender or anything. Like, he has to have power. You're talking about 3-4 months of a pretty good player. It's not one of the Braves' top 5 prospects, that's for sure. And that, you know, part of this is unfair because the Braves have so many good prospects.
Right. Like
a lot of teams, like, their number 5 prospect probably wouldn't be enough for Mike Moustakas. For the Braves, it'd be way too much.
It might be too much. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know more about actual prospect value than I do, but like, all the big names you're thinking about in your head are too much right now for Mike Moustakas.
Yeah. That's my thing. If it, like, I'm kind of like, off the top of my head, there's like seven or eight guys that I'm like, if they're in the deal, I just don't know if it's worth it. But at the same time, like, towards the bottom of that list, I'm not sure if the Royals are even interested in trading him, just because they're the Royals, not because it wouldn't be fair market value. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
But like, the Royals just, like, they function. I mean, they're not quite as, like, you know, hesitant to trade guys and do stuff as like the Orioles or something like that. But, you know, where they're just like, they will hold on to their dying assets to their graves, which is pretty much what they're doing this year. But, you know, it's, I mean, I could see, like, kind of like a fringy top 10 guy for the Braves, like, going in a deal for that. Now, whether or not the Royals would do that, that's my problem, is like, I just don't know what the Royals realistically think is going to happen, because I think that they value Moustakas higher than what he is in this year's trade market. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think ideally, if you're the Braves, you'd probably rather package 2 of your second tier guys than trade 1 of your top tier guys, almost.
Yeah.
And again, you could speak to more of who those guys are than I could at this point. Like, I could throw out names because I know guys to some extent, but of course you're the prospect.
Well, you know, you say that, but you know, here's the problem this year, just in terms of tiers. There's been so many promotions.
Oh, that's
both
true.
From the major minors to the major leagues. And, like, within the minor leagues and kind of these varied performances, and, like, there's guys I still don't even know where I want to get a set, like, who's actually good. There's guys I'm higher on than I was before the season. Like, I really think Bryce Wilson's going to be, you know, probably one of the better pitching prospects in the system. But at the same time,
would you trade Bryce Wilson for Michael Stockis is the question.
No, I would not. No.
Okay.
That tells you where I think Bryce Wilson is in the system right now.
And I know you like him a lot, but, like, I mean – okay, think about it in your head, your own list. How many guys does it get down before you wouldn't trade him before you wouldn't trade a guy from Moustakas? Is there 10?
7 to 8.
So Bryce Wilson's one of the 7 or 8. Interesting.
7 to 8 is not even in the conversation. After that, I'm not even interested in the conversation. After that, it's debatable.
Because the
problem with the, like, there's this mutual option that might not actually be the worst thing in the world, and 2, the money's right. You know what I mean? Like, he's not an expensive player this year. And, you know, if it was one thing, if it was like the last year of like a $15 million a year deal, but it's not. I mean, that part of the value that you're going to be getting from a stock is you're getting a 121 WRC plus, assuming he's still hitting like that, if not better. And you're getting him for, you know, less than you're playing Nick Markakis this year, who is also a crazy value.
Yeah. I mean, Markakis has been out of his mind, which. You
what
know.
I want to hear about is what trade proposals the Braves are getting for Markakis this year.
I mean,
that is fascinating to me.
I do think it's interesting in some ways to think and like hear how the league perceives Markakis right now, because you know there's 3 years of Braves evidence of him not being very good, and then well, not terrible or anything, but just sort of very average kind of player. And then this year he's been out of his mind. It's 2 months, but it's now fully 2 months, and he's still doing it. So it's a weird setup. And he, you know, $11 million on expiring is not a lot of money in a trade. Like you're taking on probably by the time the Braves would actually trade him, $5 million.
Yeah,
that's not very much money.
No, it is not.
So yeah, I have no clue. I mean, I think we have and for this exercise, we'd have to assume that Markakis is still hitting like this in June and July, which
he's ending the season as a Brave, which is not where I would have put my money.
Yeah, no, I would have been stunned if you told me he would still be on the Braves, frankly, like 3 months ago. But he's been as good as he could possibly be. So, and you know, if you're the Braves and you're trying to win, Markakis, this version of Markakis is a lot better than any other option you have. So there's no urgency to trade that guy. I mean, if he cools off, it's a different discussion. But at this point, he'd have to cool off so much for anyone in the organization to think that he wasn't so much better than your other options, whether it be Peterson or whatever else. Like, he'd have to go into the tank. And I don't think that's going to happen because, you know, even if you don't believe this, his baseline is a league average hitter. And if he's just that the rest of the way, he's going to finish with a 115 WRC plus, 120. Like, that's a really good player for a full season. So, I don't know. It's weird, man. Markakis is out of his mind. But, yeah, I mean, going back to Moustakas a little bit, like, I'm kind of with you. I think because the Braves are – in some ways, the Braves are loaded so much that it'd be easier to trade one of these guys. But on the other hand, they have so many guys who probably are worth more than he is. So, it's also desperation level. Again, like, the Braves aren't going to suddenly go all in on 2018 because I think Anthopoulos knows that 2019 was always the target and beyond. But if you're.
And they might not have to. They might not have to just like bet all their chips on this year.
Well, you don't have to. I mean, if all you do is Mike Moustakas at the deadline and maybe a reliever, that's not going all in. Like, but if they wanted to go all in, they could certainly get him. I mean, there's no reason they couldn't. But like, I don't know. Trading one guy for Mike Moustakas, trading. You know, the number 9 prospect in the system for Mark Moustakas is not going all in, but it's also, you know, there's a little risk there. Like, you're putting some stock in 2018 because to this point, they have not done anything to emphasize 2018 as a year that they're trying to go out and win. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The Ronald Acuna thing, not starting in the majors. Like, they didn't go out and sign anybody this offseason. And granted, nobody thought that they were going to be this good this early, and I don't care. In the front office, there's no way they thought they were going to be this good so far. But there's no indication one way or the other that they are willing to go in or not willing to go in, because in the offseason, they didn't do anything.
Well, to be fair, no one did, really.
Oh, I'm with you, but like, and there was no, and by the way, I praised them for not doing anything. There was no reason for them to do anything because they have all these young guys. But the only bit of evidence that we have that they may not be you know all in for 2018 is holding Acuna down for two plus weeks. That's the only thing that we have to go on, and that's not really that big of a thing to go on. It's just, you know, I'm not sure if they win another game somewhere in the first 3 weeks if they have Ronald Acuna on the roster. But aside from
that, not the way Tucker was hitting.
No, Tucker was great. So you know that didn't bite them either. So like they're walking on air at the moment, the Braves, in pretty much every way aside from. Knock on every wood about Acuna, but yeah, it's going to be interesting and to be sure, because third base is the spot. We all know it doesn't have to be Moustakas, but there are other guys available. I think there was a smart thing that I read this week about Adrian Beltre being an interesting option. I would agree with that as sort of a break glass in case of emergency kind of option. There's Donaldson. There's all these. Third base is not, it's kind of weirdly the prime spot to trade for right now. So, like, the stars are aligning in a big way for the Braves to go out and make this move. I can't predict it. That's where I'll draw the line.
Yeah, it's hard to, I don't really have a feel for what Anthopoulos will do in, like, the first year in an organization, because you just, how he evaluates guys and how he's, you know what I mean? Like, in terms of, like, how he values players and, it's not like a copy thing where, you know, it's like, you know, it's all about absolute value. You know what I mean? Like, every trade that guy made he was like geared towards trying to get maximum value, even if that meant, you know, guys that were years away. Whereas Anthopoulos, you know, what does he see the team as? You know what I mean? Does he think that this is a sustainable thing? And if he does, does he feel like he needs to make a move? You know what I mean? Because there's still, I mean, that what beyond third base, you know, does he really feel like that that's going to be something that he needs to do, or he can wait, you know, 2 or 3 months, get, you know, not great production from there, and then call up Austin Riley. Now, Acuna being out is going to cause a little bit of a problem, because then you have Preston Tucker in there, and if he doesn't hit well, then all of a sudden the offense becomes a lot less scary.
That is definitely true.
Because you don't want left field and third base being a hole, because that means a third of your lineup isn't very good.
Well, yeah. So, plus, when you throw in Swanson, is this not exactly an overwhelming offensive asset? And then Inciarte is still a below average hitter for the season so far. So yeah, you're getting in some weirdness there offensively if you have a couple more holes in your lineup. But hopefully Acuna is not going anywhere for a while, because he's been good this year. Before we get to the mailbag, anything you want to throw out there minor league wise? I feel like I've neglected the minor leagues recently because that's just not my DNA, and you haven't been on in a while. So anything you want to get off your chest minor league wise? I know the draft's coming as well. We'll probably talk about the draft after the draft, because I'm not going to preview the draft, I don't think. Maybe I'll talk Carlos into coming on for 15 minutes, because Carlos Collazo, old friend of the program, is going to be on MLB Network.
I'm so happy
for
him.
The night of the MLB draft, which is insane for me. Carlos and I ran a website called ATL All Day together when he was in college. And I've known Carlos since he was, I think, 19, 20, somewhere in there. So it's kind of wild that he is going to be a television analyst, even for one night, but that's happening. So shout out to Carlos.
Yep. I already told him that he has to shout out Talking Chop sometime during the broadcast. So I'm looking forward to that. In terms of the minor league side, you know, Austin Riley's still hitting really well. Christian Pache connected for a home run, and he's stealing bases. I read somewhere that one scout said that he was the best prospect that scout had seen this year so far. So that's obviously a good sign. On the pitching side, Bryce Wilson's been pitching really well. Kyle Muller, he got promoted to high A not too long ago. Right around that time when the Giants were sweeping the Braves is when he got the promotion. And, you know, he had a good start today. Kyle Wright's been really uneven, and it's a little bit disconcerting because he looks good for like four innings. And you're like, wow, this guy's didn't really pitch. And then everything falls apart for him, and I honestly don't know what to attest it to beyond this is a guy that really didn't get to experience full season ball and like the once every 5 days rotation until this year. And that's like really pitching one every 5 days as opposed to, you know, those 2 or 3 inning stints after he was drafted. So I'm hoping that, you know, that kind of irons itself out. Giancarlo Encarnacion and Drew Waters down in Rome are really, really good. Drew Waters in particular, he missed some time with an arm issue, and he's come back and all he does is just hit the cover off the ball. And he doesn't look like a guy who should be hitting the ball as hard as he does. The guy can run. He can play in the field. I expect him to make a big jump in the rankings. William Contreras and Giancarlo Encarnacion making big jumps too. Beyond that, you know, there's guys like Travis DeMeritt who started off like it was like 2 for 30 or something like that, and now he's hitting really well again. And he hit a home run today. So I mean, there's a lot of fun stuff happening. It's just not kind of the same names we're used to seeing. So it's kind of hard to, you know, everyone's like, what happened to the minor league system? Like, they're still good. It's just not the same guys, because a lot of the guys that we got used to talking about, they're playing in the major leagues right now.
Yeah, it's, I know that's weird for you in a lot of ways. It's weird for me, and I don't even cover those guys the way that you do. So, yeah,
I mean,
the podcast is.
I haven't had a minor league recap with Ronald Acuna, Ozzy Albies, or Mike Soroka in it for a long time, and it's been really weird.
Are you getting withdrawal symptoms, or what's going on?
I mean, I get a little twitchy. You know, like I start like scratching myself, but you know, I make do with the fact that, you know, guys like Tuki Tsun are among the minor league leaders in strikeouts. That feels pretty good.
By the way, I'm not sure if you heard the podcast a couple weeks ago when I had Gaurav on, and I think Gaurav might have had an aneurysm talking about Tuki Tsun.
He's looked really good.
Oh, I know. I think you remember, like, Tuki's been was always my favorite guy. So I'm all the way in. I think Gaurav was like, there was like a, I can't remember who the comp was, but it was outrageous. I think Gaurav's all in. That's all I'll say about.
Gaurav has two modes. He's just not in at all or all in. He's on Drew Waters. he's on Tuki. I mean, Tuki was in a spot. I'm not sure if it was base. It was either bases loaded or like second and third. And he reached back and reached back for 99, and the guy never had a chance to hit it. And I was just like, okay. So
yeah,
that'll
do.
Yeah, I mean, and with that, if you're throwing upper 90s with that curveball,
it's over.
Yeah, he's changing speeds on his fastball really well. His changeup's improved. You know, he's gonna have he has his times where his command is still not there, but when it's on, it's just, there's just no hope. Just go home.
Yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. Well, yeah. Okay, we can move on to the mailbag real quick. We've done a lot, so we'll probably go through this a little bit quickly. But first question comes from, I think it's Ariston Bowers, who asks, basically he realizes all the small sample size caveats, but how do we understand Nitmarkakis' defensive stats being better than Ronald Acuna's defensive stats so far? Do we attribute it to Ender's range, or is there something going on with the picture of Acuna's defense or Markakis' defense? Just for context before I let you answer, Markakis has 4 DRS right now, which is probably better than I think he probably is in general. And he's about break even overall defensively on Fangraphs and Baseball Reference in terms of their overall like WAR stats. Acuna is about break even on Baseball Reference, but actually is a pretty decently strong negative on Fangraphs defensively. So, what do you see with your eyes? I think the small sample stuff is definitely out there because defensive metrics are like some of the worst things to have small samples on. But yep. What do you think about Acuna's defense? And is Markakis suddenly better, or is it just sort of a weird sort of blip on the radar there?
Well, for starters, I mean, there's the positional adjustment of left field versus right field. Yes. So, I mean, like Acuna is automatically penalized. Like he is being handicapped because of the position he plays, regardless of how good he is at it or not. Two, I think that the Braves have kind of adopted a lot of the defensive metrics in terms of positioning, which I think has helped Markakis a lot, putting him in better spots to where he can actually like make plays because he's just not a guy that's going to range to go get them. And Markakis has played well. You know, I'm not going to say that he's like, you know, lights out right in right field or anything like that, but he's gone back on balls that I would think that most of the times he wouldn't get to. And you know, that's a shout out to him that he's played pretty well. But I mean, defensive metrics just in general, they generally lag behind in data, especially like defensive runs and saved and all that other stuff. And defensive metrics in general are really problematic right now with the way shifts and alignments are working. It's more problematic in the infield in terms of like, you know, like gauging a guy's range, because you know, if you're shifting all the time, it's like your numbers look weird and all this other stuff. So I'm a little bit skeptical of, I'm becoming more skeptical of defensive metrics than I used to be. And I'm trying to trust my eyes. You know, Acuna's had a couple times where, you know, he maybe bobbled a ball here and there. And when he's only been up for, you know, less than a month, you know, those things are going to stand out more than they would normally. But at the same time, if you're asking me who's a better defender right now, Acuna or Markakis, I'm still going to say Acuna, but I'm, at the same time, Markakis has played well. So, I mean, I'm overall, I'm just very pleased with how well Markakis has been playing. But, you know, in terms of like, you know, when a ball is being driven and you have to run and go get it, who do I want, Markakis or Acuna? It's not even close.
Yeah, I do think that's a good important point that you put out there about the positioning. That's really helped Markakis, because if you had to find a weakness with him, it was always going to be range. Yep. That's something Markakis, you know, I think he had that obscenely long errorless streak, because if he gets to the ball, he's going to catch it. It's not like Markakis is some disastrous outfielder. He just can't really get to balls. But if he's in a better placement, that really helps him. His arm's not great either. And listen, he's not some lights-out defender, but it's better than it has been. And I'm with you. I think Acuna is better. That's not news to anybody. But, you know, Acuna's young, and he's not a perfect defender by any means. He has strengths and weaknesses at this point. I think he's going to be awesome. Maybe even pretty darn soon, but he's already good because his range and all that. I mean, his arm is obviously like leaps and bounds better than Markakis' arm. So yeah, I think it's a lot of small sample size theater. But Markakis has been a little bit better, and Acuna he'll be fine. Let's not worry about Acuna's defense at all. By the way, I pulled up Markakis' Fangraphs page to talk about his stuff here. Still has more walks and strikeouts on the season. Whew, he's been awesome.
Yeah, he's been real good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the dumbest man alive. If you want to listen, every tweet I get about Markakis is probably deserved. I will say that I was right for 3 quarters of the contract, but the last quarter I'm going to be very, very wrong, it appears. And that's fine, because he's been awesome.
Yeah, that's the kind of wrong I have no problems being.
Yeah, I'm good with being wrong on the more negative side. That's okay with me. All right, last one. Good friend of the program, Patrick Mollett, always asks good questions. He says, all World Series teams need elite relievers nowadays. Wouldn't $15 to $20 million for Craig Kimbrell over 4 or 5 years be worth it? Or do you see the Braves getting a bunch of above-average guys instead of one elite reliever for Brian Snicker to misuse? That was Patrick's Patrick's war is not mine. But Kimbrell's been an interesting topic sort of on the internet, you know, for obvious reasons. You know, the Braves played the Red Sox this weekend, and Kimbrell was obviously a former Brave. So It doesn't always have to be Kimbrel necessarily, but what do you think about the prospect of the Braves maybe getting into the market for an elite reliever? And then I guess if you want to talk about Kimbrel separately, go ahead and do that.
I'm not sure if that's necessarily like in terms of like a really like shut down reliever. That's where I would want to put my money in terms of that kind of money, because the reliever market's like you either have to pay like crazy, like, you know, that $15 to $20 million a year or something like that, you know, like some crazy amount of money, or like you're not paying anything at all. So I'm not sure if that's necessarily where I want to put my money, just because relievers. I mean, I love Craig Kimbrel. He's the best reliever I've seen live. I feel pretty certain about that. And, you know, I'd love to see him back in Atlanta, just in terms of how the money would work and what else the Braves need to be doing in the offseason and things like that. I'm just not sure if that's where I'd want to put my money. But at the same time, if he's wanting to take a little less than that and come back to Atlanta, you know, I'm in, because he's incredibly good. I like some of the relievers that the Braves have. I still like A.J. Minter. And, you know, Shane Carlsbon and Dan Winkler, both, you know, the Red Sox series notwithstanding, have both been incredibly good this year. So, like, I like those guys in the bullpen. But, you know, if you have a chance to get Craig Kimbrel and it's not for an obscene amount of money, then I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think I would avoid big ticket deals for any pretty much any reliever.
That's where I am. I mean, like, especially for like 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, there's no way I'd give anybody 5 years. There's basically been one closer in the history of baseball worth 5 year deal at Kimbrel's age. You know, Kimbrel will be 30 on Monday, actually on Memorial Day. I'll turn 30. Unless you think he's Mariano Rivera, nope. That's the one guy basically. And listen, Kimbrel had the bad year 2 years ago where he suddenly forgot how to throw the ball straight. But, you know, 2017, he was utterly unbelievable, like ridiculous, fantastic. This year, he's not been quite as good again. Like, he's still very, very good. But I would not be giving any reliever, and this is not a shot at Craig Kimbrel at all, a 4 or 5 year deal at $15 million a year. I wouldn't do that.
I don't think I'd give that to like Kenley Jansen. I wouldn't give that to anybody. Like,
no, just, I mean, they're just too volatile.
It's too volatile of a thing.
If you're the Yankees or the Dodgers, then you can do that, because if it doesn't work out, you're okay. You just paper over it. If you're the Braves, you cannot afford that deal if it goes wrong. With the caveat that, you know, Liberty Media can afford it. It's just that they probably won't choose to suddenly spend like the Yankees and Dodgers. I think people have said that to me. I never want to say the Braves can't afford stuff, because they absolutely can, but at the same time, they're not going to. So we have to be realistic about what they're going to do.
Before I let you go, this just reminded me of this, because I was talking to Garrett. It was either today or yesterday. Who do you think leads the Gwinnett Stripers in strikeouts this year, in general?
Pitching strikeouts or hitting strikeouts?
Yeah, pitchers strikeouts. Like Tukey would obviously be in the lead there, but.
I have no idea.
You're never going to guess it.
That's why I'm not going to even try.
Reliever Evan Phillips.
Oh, that. See, I would have thought about that a little bit, just because that was the other guy that Gaurav was fawning over on the podcast. And I knew he'd been really good this year. I would not have guessed that, but I'm not overly surprised.
All he does is like 1 and 2 inning stints where he like strikes out the side at least once. That's all he's done this year. And he has like upper 90s fastball and, you know, a breaking ball that is like legitimately good. Now the question becomes if he's like Mauricio Cabrera, because I mean he's definitely had some, you know, walk issues in the past, but this year he's been in really good.
Yeah, I mean last year combined Double A Triple A he walked a lot of people. I'm trying to do the math in my head. 34 walks in 51 innings.
Yes,
which is really really bad. Yes. But this year only 3.5 walks per nine. That's you can live there. That's fine. If you're striking out 13,
and it's a live arm. It's not like a junk baller that like figured it out.
Sure.
So
yeah, I mean, he seems like a potential end of the bullpen kind of guy. And by the way, you know, you still have Minter, you still have Winkler. I think Shane Carl is not going to be that guy long term. But you know, if you have a few options, again, that's just another example. Like, there's no way I would pay what it will probably take for Craig Kimbrel. Someone's going to pay Craig Kimbrel more than the Braves are going to pay him. And I don't think, you know, Kimbrel might love it in Atlanta, but he's not gonna give them a discount big enough, I wouldn't imagine, for that to be a deal that I would like.
No, you're not wrong.
And I love Craig Kimbrell. He's very, very good at baseball.
Yep. But. I mean, look, I'd love to see him as a Brave again, but that's a lot of money to give to a reliever.
I mean, I get people that want to sign him, even to 4 years and big money, because if he's the same guy he's been for the last 4 years,
he's the best reliever in baseball.
Yeah, and he's worth that much money. But you almost have to get that. Like, you got to have. I mean, to pay a guy $15 million a year as a closer that's going to throw 60 innings. That guy's got to be awesome, or it's not worth it.
And he's got to be awesome at the age of 34 as a reliever.
Right, that's where I'm
at. And where his trademark is throwing 97, 98. That's just not fair to ask of him.
No, you know what I mean? And by the way, whoever signs him could look really smart. If he's still the same guy 4 years from now, then it's a great deal. I just don't think the Braves could take that risk, frankly, given Liberty's current financial constraints that they provide. I always have to say that. I'm going to start saying that every time I talk about Liberty's finances, because I understand how much money they have. I get that they could suddenly be the Dodgers if they wanted to be, but they're not going to be doing that. They're just not going to do it. So I'd rather be realistic and talking about what they're going to do rather than what they actually could do if suddenly Liberty had a CEO that wanted to just be a huge Braves, throw the money out, Ted Turner.
Everything the Liberty media is doing is trying to
make money,
decrease their debts, to not have a bunch of money on the books.
They're trying to make money.
They're trying to make money, and they're trying to make the Braves as an asset a very valuable one, either in terms of profit or, if maybe the conspiracy theories are right and they're trying to sell the team and it's easier to sell them on not having a ton of big contracts on the books.
I totally understand, especially if you grew up in the age that I did and Ted Turner was the owner of the Braves and just spent money. Or like, it's a lot more fun to have an owner that's one person that wants to win. That I totally agree with you on that. I get it.
There are just so few of those. I mean, let's see, there's the Lerner in Washington.
Yeah, I mean, the Steinbrenners, like there are teams that have money. I mean, the Dodgers spend like they're one person, and they're not. But they print money.
Yeah, you're right.
It's the same thing as Boston.
The Dodgers kind of spend like the crazy billionaires.
And the Red Sox do the same thing. I mean, that's not one person either. But I just think as long as the Braves are owned by a media conglomerate, they're not going to spend like that, because unless the only way that happens is if SunTrust Park is suddenly Fenway and they sell out every game all season long, then that's different. Because if you're creating revenue on the level of Boston and New York, they'll spend more money. But because
the Braves as a team, I don't care who owns them, the Braves are not going to spend like that until the TV deal is up.
Between the TV deal and the fact that they're not going to sell tickets on the same level. And listen, the attendance has been way better this year for obvious reasons. The team is winning. If the team wins, people are going to come more often. But yeah, the TV deal is not good. It's just not.
The TV deal is the worst one in baseball, I think.
I mean, per market, for sure, because the Braves fan base is massive. Like, the fact that they have a bottom five TV deal with arguably the largest fan base in the country. I mean, one of the top four for sure. Like, it's like Red Sox, Yankees, Braves. I think it's pretty clearly maybe the Cardinals.
Like, maybe the Cardinals, maybe the Dodgers.
I mean, I don't think. I think the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers fans are basically just in Los Angeles. I mean, there's a lot of them, but maybe some holdover, like some old people that are still holdover from Brooklyn.
Cubs are kind of there.
Oh yeah, the Cubs are massive. Yeah. Okay, so top five or six fan base in terms of size. Grant, and again, all the caveats in the world, they're not all in Atlanta. That's the big thing about the Braves fan base. And it's kind of like the Cardinals. They're more regional. The Cardinals have that whole middle part of the country for the most part. The Braves have the entire Southeast. there are more Braves fans in Tampa than there are Rays fans. And it's not close.
I don't even think it's that close.
It's not. It's not close. I mean, I have family that lives there. It's not close at all. There are more, I think there are probably more Yankees fans in Tampa Bay too than there are Rays fans, but another story for another day. But, Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, all of those are Braves country through and through. So anyway, we're off the rails at this point, Eric, because that's what we do, you and I.
Yeah.
But hey, please tell people where they can find you now on a national scale, because you have a new job.
Yeah, I'm still a Talking Chop. I've gotten more than a few questions as to why I was leaving Talking Chop. I am not. I'm still the deputy site manager at Talking Chop, but I did this past week was the first week where I was the site manager for MLB Daily Dish, covering MLB trade rumors and news just league wide. It's been a lot of fun so far. I'm pretty tired in terms of like getting everything kind of sorted out the way I wanted it to and getting everything organized, but the staff over there is really good. There's going to be a lot of changes over there. It's not going to be just like an MLB trade rumors, sort of rehash, I guess. where, you know, you obviously there's going to be some breaking news stuff on there, but there's going to be a lot of analysis pieces that are going to be talking about like league-wide stories, which is a lot of fun to talk for me to talk about because I've really been very Braves-centric and in my particular case, very Braves minor league-centric for a long time. So I've gone from a very narrow focus to a very wide one, which has been a lot of fun for me. Brought on a couple of writers to help out in addition to the existing staff. So you're going to see a lot more of analysis pieces over there. And I'm still a talking chop. You know, I'm literally have the minor league recap open on my editor right now. I'm going to have to finish writing that as soon as this is done. So, you know, I'll still be here. I'm still going to be writing recaps. I'm still going to be doing the same things that I've been doing for a long time. It's just I have more to do. It's not really going to affect anything with you guys. Obviously, I'm still here talking to Brad. I'm never going to leave Talking Chop unless they absolutely force me to and I get an offer that I simply can't refuse to go to somewhere else. I mean, I've been at Talking Chop. This is my fourth season, which is kind of wild to think about. But, you know, it's an absolutely great place to write. There's a lot of smart people that I like a lot. I talk to the Talking Chop guys, multiples of them every day, which is more than I can say for a lot of the friends that I've had over the course of my life. So it's been a blast being here, and I'm not going anywhere, but I'm just doing something different. So if you want to read some really good analysis pieces and breaking news stuff just on MLB, make sure you check out the MLB Daily Dish. And please do not forget to just keep coming to Talking Chop. The site's been continuously growing, and it's been kind of wild this year. I thought last year was crazy in terms of how much enthusiasm there was for a site, but it's actually somehow gotten significantly better this year, which is kind of crazy. So really thank you a lot, guys, for, you know, giving supporting the site, supporting the podcast. It's just been a lot of fun.
Yeah, obviously we echo all those statements. I'm glad you're hanging around Talking Chop, and even if you left, I would make come on the podcast. Just because you have to have something else. You have to at least talk about the Braves. Like, I have the easy job. I mostly just talk. I do a little bit of writing every once in a while and game stuff. But mostly just have to spew my thoughts on this particular medium with you. So thank you, Eric, for joining me. As always, my friend. Please subscribe to the podcast, everybody. I really appreciate everybody that did that. Leave some feedback. As well as checking out the actual site post, because that'll let you know what we're actually going to talk about on the podcast. Even when we're rambling, I'm usually pretty good at catching up on all the things that we actually hit. So if you want to sort of bounce around, please go ahead and do that as well. Anyway, thank you, Eric. I appreciate it, man. We'll do it again.
No problem, man. Enjoy the rest of the NBA playoffs. I know this has been kind of a pretty exciting time for you, even though the Hawks are definitely not involved.
Oh, they are definitely not. And momentarily, I'll be watching LeBron in a Game 7. So there could be worse things in the world. And by the way, no Acuña update as of 8:36. We managed to get through an hour without an Acuña update. So I'm sure by 8:50, when we stop recording, there will be an Acuña update.
Yeah, right when it posts.
That's what happens to me.
It's going to be, you know, we get an injury update one way or the other, and there's going to be a trade rumor associated with Ozzie Albies, and your mentions are going to be a dumpster fire.
Yeah, I mean, last week was kind of a perfect example. And, you know, on top of the fire alarm, I was basically just operating the whole podcast, and so was Scott, on the assumption that the Braves were going to lose a game because they were down by, what was it, 6 runs? And then they won.
Let's see, the bottom of the ninth, it was 9-4. Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's I think that they, you know, they win that game 1% of the time, and of course it was 1% of the time where I'm recording a podcast during the game. And that's a reminder, Eric, that we should always wait till the games are over.
Nah, just let it ride. Let the hate rain down on us. It's fine.
It's totally cool, and I'm very glad we made it through this whole episode without a fire alarm. So before that stops being the case, let's sign off here. But follow Eric on Twitter at Leprechaun. Follow the site on Twitter at Talking Chop. You can follow me if you want to. I can't imagine you do, but at BT Roland, and we'll see you guys next week.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.